All right. We'd like to get our meeting started here, so I'd like to welcome everybody to the November 15th regular meeting of the Marysville Board of Education and a called meeting to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Luke?
Here.
Ms. Savage?
Here.
Ms. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Ms. Devine?
Here. All right. And if everyone will stand up, the flag is right behind us here. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cochran, for hosting our meeting tonight. First up, I need a motion to adopt our agenda for the meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith. Roll call.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next, we have an employee of the month. I don't believe he could make it tonight, but I'd like a motion to approve Jeff Ankrum, also known as Cowboy, as the classified employee of the month for November 2018.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers.
Okay, I'll read. He is a custodian here at the high school. So, let's see. I really feel like Jeff deserves to be our Employee of the Month for a lot of reasons. First and foremost is that he is a hard worker. Jeff always does everything he can to be helpful to the teachers. When I needed extra desks in my classroom, he was on the job immediately. When we were having trouble with rust spots on the floor, Jeff searched out tennis balls and cut them and put them on the legs of the desk and chairs in 5 classrooms. Not an easy task because I tried it and it was horrible. If our classrooms get a little extra dirty from an activity, he doesn't hesitate to go the extra mile and to help us clean it up. He is also a very personable guy. He tries really hard to establish relationships with teachers and also in his hall, so he knows what we need or want in all of our classrooms. And he does it all with a smile on his face. All in all, Jeff makes MHS a better place to work. So congratulations. Yay. To Jeff. Or Cowboy.
I know. I wish he was here. Okay, can we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Thank you, Cowboy, and we'll look forward to seeing you sometime. Next, we have the presentation from Marysville High School. Mr. Cochran.
Right. Well, welcome everyone to the high school on this beautiful winter night. We're glad to have you here in our studio, and we kind of changed the orientation here, so I apologize to the audience that was facing that way and now has to face back this way. But we wanted to tell you a little bit about what is going on at the high school this year. We were here in July and gave a presentation about an 18-month plan that we had for the high school. We have been working that plan throughout the school year, and we're going to give you some updates on where we are in that process. If you remember, our 18-month plan talked about testing and assessment, talked about the student learning experience, and talked about culture in our building. And we had some very specific things that we were going to do, getting our teachers to make some Tier 1 instructional shifts, get a better use of data in our classrooms, and also to expand the data abilities of our own students to identify their strengths and weaknesses. And so in this presentation, we're going to talk a little bit about how those things have been going this year. One of the big things that we've done is we have our teachers specifically in teacher-based teams. Every 3 weeks, we have our teachers get together with all the admins and with some coaches, and also Mark Gallagher, and we'll talk about his role a little bit here in a minute. And together, we all look at the data of the students in our school buildings. We're using some new platforms. I talked about Procore last year as a huge platform for our students. And if you can see this picture here, we have something that we affectionately call the War Room. I think I showed a picture of this also in the July meeting. Since that time, none of those are legible, but those are all student names. And we have really a way that we can track every single student, all 1,100 students in the building, specifically where they are in each of their core areas and how they're doing on the standards. And so if you look at that, we also have magnets next to each of those students. And so we are really looking at identifying how each student is growing throughout the school year, where they need interventions, what form of interventions those come in, and also to see if what we're doing is really having an effect on those students. And if it is not, then we are meeting with those teams and making new interventions, trying something new, talking to other teachers, getting those teacher-based teams to really look at changing the way that they are addressing those student needs. As I said, Mark Gallagher's role in this comes in a little bit because he has done something with a form that we call Tableau. And we are really able to track each student and make sure that we know where they are. With our Procore assessments, we give a major assessment. It's an AIR-like test in September. We give another one in November, and we give another one in February. I would kind of equate this to mini AIR tests. And so each time the student takes these, it says exactly where they are on the current standards for that class. Based on last year giving those, we know if a student takes a test in December and scores a certain score, that they are likely to pass the AIR test in April, or they are not likely to pass that AIR test in April, and it will specifically say where they need interventions to make sure that they can pass that AIR test in April. So it allows our teachers to put that together and form groups then of students that need more intervention, whether that's in the classroom or whether that's outside of the classroom. And perhaps it needs to be more intense and have an additional period added to their work in the school day. Now, those giant tests are really no more than litmus tests of where those kids are at that time. So if we just gave a test in September, gave another one in December, another one in February, and just kind of wrung our hands and said, oh, well, looks like they're growing or looks like they're not growing, that really would not do much for those students. So those teacher-based teams really in between, then they design their own short-cycle assessments that are also related to Procore. And then the program that Mark Gallagher built and has really listened to our needs between the admin and the teachers, he can have the teachers actually track where each of their kids are doing or where they're going by period and by student. So not to get too far into this, but this right here is Form A for our government class. And this is a particular standard. And so in September, they might not have even covered that standard yet. So you have some students in green that are getting it, the rest in red who are not. Then the teachers decided what they were going to do instructionally. They gave a smaller specific assessment on that particular standard, and then they can see the growth in the class for that standard specifically. And so we see upward trending growth, but you also see that you have some kids that are still not quite getting it all fully, and then kids that were not getting it at all. And then in the program, when you click on these kids, it creates a spreadsheet of those students, and you know by period, by subject, and also by teacher, where are the kids who are not getting that. So now they've seen it, you've taught it, they did not understand it, so as a group, what are we going to do to intervene to make sure that they do? And so we are really trying to use this data specifically to help teachers plan instructionally. Another example of how the growth is measured. And again, this is all at the fingertips, so teachers don't have to spend time and hours actually looking at what the data is telling them. These are all clickable things that they can do in just a couple minutes. We have, as I mentioned, all 1,100 kids in our system, and you can see how they're doing on Procore, which is that AIR-like test, how they've done on AIR tests in the past, and how are they doing with some of the other factors that go along with how they will score on the AIR test. And the data is very, very important. Ultimately, it is something that is new for us to be able to have this access. Usually it would take weeks, if not months, to get information back, aggregate it, put it in spreadsheets, sort it, and then by that time, you moved on from the necessity of having to learn that particular standard. So now it really is mined weekly, and so teachers can see that at their fingertips. Ultimately, having the data in your hands means nothing if those teams aren't getting together and instructionally looking at what they can do differently in the classroom to impact those students. So the next phase is that natural progression to what are we doing in the classroom with those kids. I talked in July about the standards-based cohort. We have a standards-based group of teachers, 15 of them right now, that have been selected. Some of them volunteered, some of them were reached out to specifically, and they are going forward with many of the tenets, CBE tenets, of mastery learning and standards-based grading, and looking at what can they do differently in the classroom to make that instructional shift. The idea was that these 15 explorers or advanced group would then be doing some particular PD starting in August, and then they would actually kind of bring the rest of the teachers along. And so that is what we've been doing so far. We are seeing teachers in that group, and thankfully teachers outside of that group do things differently to engage students, to follow the personalized learning PD and instructional practices that we have been going over the last few years. This is a biology class taught by Mr. Gross, who is not in that standards-based cohort, but he's getting them up out of the classroom. This was a exercise on cell division, and he had them up in the gymnasium doing things that were tactfully getting them to explore what it was in biology, but they weren't sitting being lectured to. And so we're getting more examples of engagement in the classroom. This is a government class. We've got teachers mixing in flexible grouping. This is an example of a government class where students have six different choices. They could pick how they were going to learn a particular lesson based on a standard, and then the next day the students had to pick a different group and rotate to whatever that group was that they actually selected. And so we've got teachers mixing flexible seating in with their traditional seating. In this example, they're looking at videos to learn how to, I think it was a Title IX issue that they were studying, and they could choose whether to be in a group where they discuss with their peers. They look at videos and reflect with one of their peer groups, or they write a rubric based on what the test should look like to discuss what the factors of Title IX were. And it was really great to see kids. Some kids were out in the hallway. Some kids were at tables with desks and lamps. Some people were at these videos. Other people wanted to have a more traditional one-on-one with the teacher. And it was truly up to those students to choose how they interacted in that lesson. Our Spanish program, I would hold up, is one of our highlight programs. Our Spanish teachers have fully gone without desks. This is the only small tables in the room. They've gone without desks. Sometimes we'll go in there and there'll be 30 chairs, and that's it. And every single day, all three of our Spanish teachers and our Japanese teacher are without desks. The best example I can have of how this is working is we have a teacher, Liz Adams, who has been at the high school for years, is a great, great teacher. She's very student-centered, but she would tell you that she was also very traditional. And so the other teachers kind of got her to try this. She just decided to go 2 feet in, jumped into it the first day, and I remember Sean was talking to her before when we had our teacher PD days, and she was just nervous. She had no idea what was going to happen. She said, I am outside of my comfort zone, but I'm going for it. And she has now said that she would not go back to the way that she taught before. She said it changed the way that discipline is in her classroom. She said it changed the way that kids collaborate with each other and with her. So much so that we had that group at our last PD actually present to the other teachers about what those changes were, why they felt it was so significant, and how other teachers could also interact with that type of deskless classroom. And so we have teachers trying whole hog in there, 2 feet in. Some people are doing hybrids, and other people are just getting their feet wet and actually looking at flexible seating. And if you just look at this type of environment, obviously you can see how inviting that would be to a student to engage them in that educational process. We have other teachers who are really fastening on to the growth mindset ideals that we've been talking about for the last couple years. This is a biology class. These are not just things on the board that the teacher put up as sayings. She is going over these things daily and weekly with students to believe in themselves, to productively struggle with issues that come up in biology class. Biology is a tested area, and it can be a very difficult class. So I want to show a quick example of how some of the shifts in this teacher's class, Michelle Croft, she's part of our standards-based cohort. She has really looked at putting up voice and choice opportunities for students. So instead of being a straight traditional lecture, she has given students the ability to pick how they're going to learn about DNA history and structure. I think this is the most telling thing right here, that this is the shift that she is making in her classroom, and as well as biology, all in the other classrooms as well. Complete as many activities as needed to learn the material. At first, that's a very broad and open statement, but she is not just throwing the kids out there and saying, hey, go for it. If you struggle, let me know. She's walking around, talking with the kids, identifying the strengths and weaknesses with the kids' input to figure out what is the best for that student. Some students need to be put in certain groups because she would know how they work, and they're also developing self-advocacy skills to see what their best learning styles are. Other students are just going for it. At first, some students were very scared because they had not interfaced with this type of activity before, but it's been a huge success, and it's really growing in that department. The entire science department is really looking at a whole lot of different voice and choice ways to get students involved in that process. This is another quick example of a non-standards-based cohort teacher who is a very traditional teacher. In the grade book, they have their traditional test score, but also included next to it, these are different standards, and the student is getting a score of a 1, 2, or 3 on the standard. So when students take the test, they don't just see a score of a 70%. They know, particularly on each standard, whether they are a 1, 2, 3, or a 4, meaning that they've mastered it or they have not mastered it. So we really have a lot of teachers who are grasping onto these concepts and going forward with it. One of the other big parts of the presentation that we had in July were the pathways. We had a lot of new and exciting pathways that we wanted to quickly update you on. We had business, theater, agricultural sciences, and auto tech. Those pathways to date have been great successes. Just to go through here, we had a business pathway for a certificate, foundations of insurance, logistics, engineering, and technology, and also supply chain management. So those pathways now have three teachers teaching in combination with each other to get students working towards something that is going to be valuable for them in high school and beyond. They've also collaborated together with High Point in Columbus State, and they're looking at three new additional pathways that many of them can exist with some of the same coursework, and also adding some new activities like a capstone for international business, where students can really hone in on their own interests and go beyond just the teachings inside the classroom and really pick projects that interest them. A business operations pathway, which is aligned with supply chain management in High Point, and also a computer science web developer pathway, which is with some more Columbus State software courses as well. So the business department is really taking a hold of this, and students are thriving in those pathways. Our ag science is also having some great success with their pathways. We have sports turf management. We have kids planting 10x10 plots out by the tennis courts where they were picking their own turf, their own hybrid grasses, and they were responsible for planting, growing, and doing all the science and the legwork based around growing those turf management plots. Our theater pathway is probably one of the most exciting ones as well in our school. We've got a ton of kids who are into the performing arts, as you know. This year, we have four different classes taught by Luke Ahern. We are adding two new classes next year. One of them, again, is that capstone project where students can actually look at what their particular interests are and do a more of a voice and choice type of coursework where they are really looking at their interests and planning their own coursework with Luke as a partner. And also digital storytelling, getting more of the AV side of it and the visual media and doing some things outside of the box. And these classes have really excited a lot of our kids. We just had a play last week where many students from both schools were involved in that. And there's really just an energy behind that program that I think is awesome. And kids are really talking about how cool and how neat a lot of these activities are. And again, all these things are fun, but they're also based in research of how can these make students employable beyond high school. Some of these pathways are for students that want to complete high school and be done. Some are for pathways that students want to go to a two-year technical or community college, and some are for students that want to do a four-year in advanced degrees. And many of those students are able to sit in the same classrooms and get what skill set they need and based on their interests and their desires at that time. So that's a quick look at where our pathways are going. We've got some pictures of students getting ready for the play last week. They made almost all the props for the play. I'm going to end with just something pretty simple. Sean Williams was talking to a parent. This parent in particular has a student that's in the sports turf pathway. And I think the sports turf pathway is awesome, and it's going to be growing as we continue to move forward. But ultimately, this parent had a message that spoke to us as, what is the reason of the why? Why are we doing this? Why are we trying to engage kids in their education in a more in-depth and more important way? And so I'm going to play this video as our last bit. And again, it really speaks to kind of why we're doing this and why we want to keep working hard.
Hi there. My name is Anna Segman, and my son Jackson is a freshman at Marysville High School. I'd like to take a minute to share with you what an amazing experience Jackson has had since he started high school just a few short months ago. His experiences and attitude about school weren't always the most positive in the last few years. Everything about school was a struggle, and I felt like all of our conversations centered around something negative when we talked about school. And now he's done a complete 180. He no longer dreads going to school. He comes home from school eager to share things. He does his homework on his own, and he's succeeding. But most of all, he's happy. And I feel like I have my son back. I truly feel like his change in attitude is in part due to the sports turf management class he's been taking. The hands-on approach to learning is definitely more his speed. He feels successful and confident when he participates in the other activities, and he's even chosen to be a TA during his last fall. Not only is he able to spend more, but this also motivates him to get his other classwork and homework done. I couldn't be more pleased with our experience thus far at MHS, and I look forward to seeing what the future holds for Jackson.
So we thought that was a good way to end on a message of why we want to have pathways that engage our students, because really that kind of says it all, is we want to make sure that we have something for each Jackson in our building. So with that, that's the high school presentation.
Thank you. Yeah. So comments, questions? Yeah.
Your community partner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Okay, yeah. We'll have some questions for you, too, but yes,
okay.
You want
you. Yeah. Well, I have the pleasure of introducing Sergeant Don McGlenn. We have a new thing we started last year where we were to talk about a community partner that partners with our particular buildings. This year, the name that came up to Scott, Sean, and I was pretty obvious that Don McGlenn is somebody who is a huge partner with the schools, MHS in particular, but all the schools, I think, equally. I think I was the best way to sum up Don's work is specifically, I was talking to Scott just before this meeting, we said that there's not a time that you call Don McGlenn that you can't get a hold of him. I very rarely have ever called him and have gotten a voicemail. Whether it's 10 o'clock at night or 8 in the morning or whatever time, he's going to pick up the phone and he's going to drop whatever he's doing to make sure that he's helping students and families in our buildings and in our community. I can't tell you how many times we've said that, hey, we heard this or we heard that. He'll go out and make a home visit, talk to the family, talk to the kids. He really, really just cares about every single kid in this community.
He has a relationship with all of our students. He comes into our cafeteria all the time, jokes with kids, knows all the kids. I think the kids know him as well as probably anybody in the community, and they really gravitate towards him. They really believe in him and trust in him, and that's ultimately, I think, the biggest mark of the difference he's making in all of our school buildings. So it's my pleasure to present Don McGlynn with the Community Partnership Award, because he is very, very deserving of this. Don,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Come on over. Yeah, you don't get off that easy.
Thank you.
You can have
a roof.
Thank you.
You
can
have a roof for those buttons.
Thanks for everything you're doing.
So now back to this high school presentation, Mr. Cochran, I am so happy to see everything that you guys have accomplished since the last meeting. I know we had a lot of questions at the last meeting, and man, you guys have been busy, and it just warms my heart to see some of the things going on, see some of the classrooms, and know that, you know, your staff are you know, allowing themselves to be uncomfortable and try some new things, but it sounds like they're really getting a lot of positive feedback from the experience.
We've had a lot of positive things. We have a long way to go still. We've had a lot of positive things happen in our classrooms this year.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great.
Do the students know you have a war room?
They don't. And it's actually under lock and key. There's some sensitive things in there that we wouldn't want people to see.
I actually wanted to go back to the furniture, like the flexible seating. So from our building visits, I've kind of gotten to see that in the elementary, most of the rooms have that kind of flexible seating. But I wasn't aware that a lot of that was going on in the high school. Is that like a teacher-by-teacher thing or subject-by-subject, or how does that play out?
It's really subject-by-subject, I would say. And we have some people, again, doing kind of like hybrid things with that. Ultimately, some teachers are just taking a traditional desk and putting them in groups of four. And so you can start with kind of like a baby step, if you will, like that. Some teachers are putting Carver squares in their room and removing half their desks so students have a choice of where they're going to sit. And in some classrooms, it's a little bit tight if you have desks, you can't necessarily always get rid of those desks because we have to give quizzes and tests and those types of things, but there's ways around that. We've taken some long tables. Our social studies department essentially has a group of tables that are maybe 30 or 50 long, and then they'll just keep a traditional seating inside the classroom, but then use the outside hallway. So if you go up in the social studies department on any given day, there are three or four different outside hallway groups coming from their own classrooms. So they've kind of done like a hybrid model with a lot of those things. Spanish and Japanese, again, are deskless altogether, but there's a lot of people that have taken an interest in that type of activity.
So when you say deskless, Tom, then they kind of just sit in groups and do things together as the teacher goes around to these groups?
Or? Yes, and so the teachers will, I think they've numbered some of their desks or chairs as well, so sometimes just to mix it up, especially if they don't want certain kids always sitting next to each other,
right. Mm-hmm.
They'll say, hey, you're number five every day, and your number five is going to be somewhere different every single day.
Okay.
Now, if your best friend is number six and we can't have you together, then five and six are probably never together. So they just kind of do it that way. And if there's a test or a quiz, they might put them back to back so no one's really facing each other.
Okay.
And they might have like a lap whiteboard.
That's what I was wondering, how they, yeah,
on.
Okay.
And sometimes there are students that say, hey, I really need a desk. And mm-hmm. so they could put a desk in the hallway for someone who really asked for that.
Okay.
Some students just don't like the informality of writing on their laps or something along those lines right there. So it's really a mix.
Much more relaxed.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can see when you go into those classrooms, we've actually taken groups of our teachers who are the more traditional teachers, and in the middle of a classroom, we'll take them down to Spanish
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, here's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a high-level, difficult class where they're getting it done with no desks and mixing kids up,
right.
Having kids talk to each other while the teacher goes around and talks to the kids. And it's really eye-opening for a lot of those teachers. Because mm-hmm. one thing to say in a picture, hey, try this, it looks good. Mm-hmm. But then there's always an excuse of, well, that won't work for my kids because I've got this kid, that kid, and another kid. When they mm-hmm. go down there, and they see, well, there's my kid that I just said I have three periods later that it's not going to work for, and they can see them functioning in that classroom highly.
One of the components of personalized learning is shifting responsibilities from the teacher to the students in terms of who's responsible for education. The students have to take more responsibility. As you begin to see some of those instructional methods in the classroom, has it changed things throughout the building? Have you noticed kids acting differently in the hall, the cafeteria, that kind of thing, or maybe it's too early to notice something? And Sean, Scott, if you...
I have noticed, especially with our Spanish kids, they can be scattered all throughout the building at any time of the day. And almost every single time I walk by, I'll ask them, what are you doing? What are you working on? And they're working. They're not screwing around. They're not goofing around. They're not watching videos. They are away from the teacher and working. And a lot of times they will be practicing speaking. That's a big thing in foreign languages, to practice that speaking. Well, if you're practicing in the classroom, you're practicing where everybody can see you, and it's going out on a limb a little bit, you know, taking a risk to do that in front of your peers and everything. So they really have embraced the speaking part because they can go to a more secluded spot someplace in the school and practice with a partner versus practicing with a partner, but the whole class is sitting right there. So I've noticed a lot of kids that are on task, and I've made sure that I tell the Spanish teachers that when I see your kids out, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're working, they're on task, they're focused, and they know what standards they're working.
And this isn't necessarily a negative, but a lot of our students have struggled with, most of our teachers now are giving retakes and replacing the grade with the new grade, but also asking the students to do quality instructional tasks before they take that retake. And I think a lot of students have struggled with that because it takes that self-advocacy to that next level. Not only do they have to identify their own strengths and weaknesses, they've got to put forth that effort to do the X, Y, and Z, and then go seek out a teacher to take that retake. Like in chemistry, both chemistry teachers have all of their retakes are one-on-one, and so the students have to go seek out the teacher and set that time up and try to make a move that is not something in the past that those students had to do. Mm-hmm. I know that like maybe some of them in the younger grades, they're getting used to that process, and they're it wasn't a revolt, but at first you'd have kids start to say, well, you know what, my 65 is fine, I'm passing, my 85 is fine, it's not an A like I wanted, but it's a B, but if I have to do these two things to get the A, maybe it's not in my best interest to do that. And so it's shifting that idea of really getting students to identify, hey, here's where I don't know things in chemistry, and if I want to go on to the next class or go on to college, I need to hit those particular standards. And that's been a shift. It's a huge shift for both teacher and student alike because it's changing that onus of, instead of the teacher seeking you out and saying, hey, I'm going to give you the retake right now, and it's just Form B, and so you really, you're just re-answering the multiple choice that you missed, and everyone knows what that answer is. They're giving them a different assessment, and it really requires that student to take the time to identify their weaknesses and then change it and do something different and then seek out the teacher. And so that's a skill that in college they'll use, and if they don't attend college or go off to the workplace, that's something they'll definitely have to use regardless of the course content.
I visited the elementary buildings and the intermediate and so forth. You see kids really embracing control over their own educational activity. And I keep thinking about, as those kids come up, they can begin to really challenge, the teachers, instructors in the class. I need more. I need you to do these things so that I can learn. And that's a That's going to be a wonderful problem.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. A quick question about the pathways. Sure. Are those all freshmen in the pathways, or who all can take the classes in those pathways?
They're 9 through 12.
They are 9 through 12, so
yes.
You don't have to
start. So, okay. If you're a 12th grader, you won't get very far in the pathway.
Right. And do the pathways, are they linked to, like, Columbus State or Otterbein or... Like, you know, is it a pathway towards some kind of a degree?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, like, in business, all of our pathways are based on Columbus State.
Gotcha.
And to be totally transparent, not every pathway can be achieved fully in the high school because, for example, the insurance certificate,
mm-hmm.
we are currently offering 4 of the 8 classes.
Okay.
So you can get started on that pathway and then finish up once
right.
you get to Columbus State.
Right.
There's other ones that are, if you finish the business admin mm-hmm. pathway here, then it's your first semester in a business degree from Columbus State. So it's really giving those students a leg up.
Right.
And then ideally, too, if you took the business pathway here and mm-hmm. then didn't go on to Columbus State and then went mm-hmm. to apply for a job in the business world,
mm-hmm.
you would also have that experience that you could speak of specifically that would put you ahead of somebody else.
Okay, great.
So, you know, I'm in the arts, and I think the arts are great for education. I think there's so much that you learn from it. But what if a parent came to you and said, okay, so now we have a theater pathway. How is that going to help my kid out of high school?
Well, I think we'd have to figure out what their particular interest is. And I think, like, that capstone kind of speaks to that as well, because the idea is that the students get experience in kind of a myriad of activities that might be in the performing arts. Ultimately, once they find their interest, then we could work on the idea of the capstone is that we can find internships externally from the high school. So if you say that you want to be on the AV and lighting side of it, you could work specifically with the programs that we have here at the high school, but then also maybe intern with an outside company or group. And so ideally, we want to be able to have a conversation with that parent and that student and kind of design that type of work. I know that when we were talking to Otterbein a way back about mm-hmm. pathways, they jokingly said that a lot of students don't realize that 90% of the jobs are behind the curtain.
Right.
And thinks that they're on stage, and that's great. And some students are going to do that, and they're going to be great at it. But a lot of the students that end up doing that all the way through college mm-hmm. then sometimes matriculate to a job that is still around that, whether it's directing or doing the set designs or whether it's doing the AV and the lighting. A lot of those jobs are behind the curtains working for big companies. So.
Yeah, I really like that approach because one is personal and individual, but also I know when I was in high school, I thought if you go into the arts, that means you're trying to be a star. And that seems very risky and very unlikely, and you don't get a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that you're talking about, it's like there's all kinds of things that this could lead to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's especially adding those capstones to some of those pathways, that really kind of, in my mind, potentially could take it to the next level by getting internships aligned with, really, we can always, we say that we can do the research and know what is out there as far as the job market, but there's no replacement for getting a student to really be in the real world, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and getting that experience while they're in high school to figure out what they need to do. And if they really like that field, too. A success could also be you do an internship and figure out, hey, this is not for me. I still want to be in this industry, but maybe I want this pathway. Because when I was doing my internship, I saw that this aspect was out there that I never knew existed.
Mm-hmm.
So you brought up a great point. Internships for... do we have a formalized internship program coming out of the Marysville High School?
Tammy Cooper does a lot of the internships right now. She's based in the STEM school,
mm-hmm.
So working with High Point, and we'll be kind of using her to help us with that. Also, Luke Ahern will be, as the theater pathway director, if you will, here at the high school, will be doing a lot of those things, reaching out to companies as well.
Yeah, I think there's a great value in high school students getting a little bit of experience in the real world mm-hmm. to help determine
absolutely
their interest in different areas.
Absolutely. A lot of times they don't know what they don't know until
exactly.
they step their foot in there and see what it's all about.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank
right.
you so
thank
much.
You much.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Sean. All right. Any public participation? Nope. Then next up, I'll move on to High Point Report. I emailed this to you. Mr. Doug Chittenden could not be here tonight. But as always, if you have any questions, reach out to him. I think he does a nice job giving us that update. Next, Superintendent's Report.
All right, I have a couple of things. First of all, we hosted about 20 people from Arizona this month to take a look at what we were doing in our schools around personalized learning. Arizona has adopted a state model, so we had everyone from superintendents to policymakers to advocates in that area. So we spent time at Creekview, Early College, and Northwood. In classrooms, and then they had an opportunity to talk to practitioners and administrators as well. So that went very, very well. Also, earlier in the month, Ashley, Heather, and I presented at a conference in Nashville highlighting personalized learning for our district. Well over 150 people attended our session. That went very well. It's definitely clear that the work we're doing is really on the forefront, quite honestly, of the nation. Other people are trying to learn from us, and so that's pretty exciting, especially being at that conference. It was iNACL, which is their kind of a coalition of personalized learning and out on the forefront of research and policy. Let's see, I'm skipping around here. Today, as you know, is our first calamity day, unfortunately. So I woke up at 3:15 hearing the ice hit my window, didn't go back to sleep. So we'll see what tomorrow brings. There's kind of mixed forecast, but we'll keep you updated. If you remember, this year our calendar is a little bit different. We don't wake up immediately. We make up after the third day. So just remember that we had today off. The other thing, I don't really have a great order, so I would be remiss if I did not talk about our success with the levy. I could not be more proud of the outcome and proud of the work that our committee, we have tons of people to thank and community members. As you know, I was had angst over that second issue, although everyone was telling me to relax. But we won by 340 votes, and we won by 340 some votes because we worked our plan. We had a great strategy in place. We worked that plan. We ensured that we talked to every single parent in the school district about the issues, every group that would have us. We talked to them as well. We followed up with trying to get those positive voters to the polls, and certainly with that second issue, it was a difference maker. I believe wholeheartedly, had we not gone to the extremes and ran it basically like a new levy ask, I don't think we would have been as successful on that second. So I could not be more excited. Number one, to not have to run another levy for quite some time. I mean, it's a distractor as a teacher from your work, as a superintendent from our core work. It's fundraising. Our community is only so big, and we're asking the same people for money. And I don't know the final number, but probably fundraise about $14,000-ish. It's a lot of work and a lot of hours and volunteer time that you can't even put a dollar figure to. So I just want to publicly thank everyone again for their support, whether you did a lit drop or you called someone or you help stuff a bag. It paid off in the long run for our kids, and I could not be more thrilled about that. We did want to recognize three special people from that committee. Chris Schmidt could not be here tonight. She had a dinner meeting with work. But we wanted to recognize Jane and Jared as well. So if you guys would like to come up, I think Sue, you want to give them the...
Sure. Yes.
Jared served as our co-chair with Chris Schmank. This was his first year on the committee. And Chris has run several campaigns for us. And Jane was in existence as our treasurer when I came here. How long have you been doing this?
Since 2008.
Since 2008. So she's a diehard for us, for the benefit of our kids. And we just thought it was pretty important. This was big for us to recognize all their efforts on behalf of our students.
So we have these beautiful plaques made by our students, or
no, it was
by
just
Nate.
So local.
Okay, yes. In appreciation of your hard work on behalf of the students of Marysville Schools, Treasurer Jane Ader.
Thank you.
Co-chair Jared Weiss. Let you know how much we appreciate it.
I have to add that the STEM school kept me on my toes. I was doing this big manila folder with their deposits and things. Mm-hmm. And what do I find? $1 million bill.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
From Mr. Chasen or something? Yes, I think so.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And congratulations.
And we'll see that Chris gets hers as well. Yeah, I shared with her as well. The last two items I have, I'd asked Jonathan to give a quick Bunzel Middle School project update. I can probably give it to you. Weather stinks and we're behind. That's probably the answer. Do you want to?
Yeah, just real quick. Yes, Mother Nature needs to cooperate with us. But really, water and sewer is complete. The water line's been installed. Storm structures have now been installed. The building foundation is complete. Bleacher piers are poured and ready. And then just the curbs were completed yesterday. They're sitting under an orange blanket right now, curing. So we're excited about the work that we're getting done. The main underground field drainage for the main field is complete. The finger drains need to go in yet, but you got to wait for that next step. So next steps is just continuing with the concrete work, sidewalks, and staircase. So that's just a quick update.
Okay. And we'll talk about the high school stadium. It's later in our agenda, so I didn't ask him to prepare anything for that.
Okay.
And then the other issue I know has been a hot topic, even locally, and is on our policies for second read, is an update on bullying. And it's probably been a while, and we have a couple of new members. So I asked Jonathan to kind of give a highlight of our bullying procedures, like what happens and what is bullying. I think there's a little rhetoric to understand a little bit with what bullying is and is not. And then he's going to share with you the procedure from a administrative seat when we have a report of bullying.
All right. I have two handouts for you this evening.
Do you guys like copies? Or?
So I would probably ask you each what your definition of bullying is, and I would receive five different definitions. So there is an official definition established by a Ohio Revised Code, which is also a part of our board policy. So if you flip to the multi-paged document, if you look at number 10, and again, I'll make more sense of this document here in a second for you, but bullying is defined as any intentional written, verbal, electronic, or physical act that a student has exhibited toward another particular student more than once, and the behavior both causes mental or physical harm to the other student and sufficiently severe, persistent, or pervasive that it creates an intimidating, threatening, or abusive educational environment. And again, that's Ohio Revised Code of what the true definition of bullying is. So as administrators in our district, the word bullying is used very loosely by students, by parents, and you know what? That's okay. We try to educate our students and educate our parents about truly what bullying is, but sometimes it's just reaching out for help. So as an administrator, they have a responsibility to conduct a thorough investigation on any alleged bullying report.
So the document you have in front of you is actually an electronic Google form, which is really our protocol and system to assure proper reporting and communicating is done. And so every instance is officially investigated. Not only do we have to make reports to the state of Ohio for certain cases, but also we have civil rights data collection that we have to follow. This document assures that we meet those requirements as well. So it's pretty thorough. I mean, you can read through it. It's really our protocol to make sure we're on point.
Now, knowing that every situation is different, do you have a sense when an allegation of bullying is made, what the time commitment is for the principal or the other administrator to kind of go through this?
Very situational. Yeah. Very situational, Dick. Some investigations can take 20 minutes. Some investigations can take 2 or 3 days, depending on the situation. So I know our administrators spend a tremendous amount of time and take each investigation extremely seriously. Now, in the end, there's allegations of bullying. Whether or not it truly meets that definition of bullying is not the true focus. The true focus is, okay, so by law we have to determine if it's bullying or not. We have to report for civil rights. We have to report to the state. But that's not the goal. The goal is if a kid is making a bad choice and is mistreating someone, whether it's bullying or not, the administrators are going to work with that kid and they're going to work with the family to correct that behavior in order to protect the other student. Again, whether it's bullying or not, it's about the behavior and getting that corrected. That's the focus of our administrators. And sometimes our administrators, they engage in conversations with parents about that because that bullying is just a big word that's used so much and truly understanding what it means. And sometimes parents are educated because they're involved with a situation and then they understand it. The second handout that I gave you is an example of a document that we have to complete. And we have to provide to the alleged victim, and we have to provide to the alleged, quote-unquote, bully at the end of the investigation, whether it's bullying or not. So this is also required. So very, very thorough. Several protocols in place for good reason to make sure we do our due diligence. And again, it's about correcting the behavior and the choices so it doesn't continue.
And the staff training that goes along with this, like other than administrators, like
our admin team, they talk with their staff.
Yeah.
Every year, if you hear students, you know, they can jump in and try to find out further information. If it is alleged bullying, they then get in contact with the office, and then the office will conduct an investigation. Sometimes guidance counselors will conduct an investigation, depending on the school and the team. And sometimes the kid's involved, who's got the better relationship, who can get down to it real quick and figure out what's going on so we can get corrected. So very situational. Teachers investigate things in the classroom all the time.
Right.
You know, so but official allegations, it's to the office.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Just one more quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes this activity is taking place outside of school or through social media or other types of public forums. It's not actually something happening in the school. So what is our protocol for that type of thing? Do we have anything when it's social media based or whether it's something that's taking place off school grounds?
Yep, because part of that definition is electronic means. So that doesn't always necessarily happen physically on school grounds. It's where it has an impact to the school setting and environment for the child is when the school can really get involved and take certain measures. Sometimes we're limited But at the end of the day, what we're going to do is try to help anyway. You know, we might be limited on what we can do, quote-unquote disciplinary, but we can always get involved and try to help the kids and communicate with the families. That doesn't stop us from doing that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That's it for me.
Okay. Treasurer's report.
Okay, so you may remember from every five-year forecast presentation I've ever given that we're a cap district,
yes.
Which meant that we weren't the formula basically wasn't working for us. Or even though the formula said we should get X number of dollars, the state didn't have enough to give us that full amount. But in May and October, I said we were projecting in fiscal year 19 that this current year. That we would no longer be a cap district, and we would be one of a few that would be called a formula district, which would mean the formula is actually working, and we're getting what the formula says we should get. So that was actually confirmed in October, because October is when the state foundation formula, the enrollment numbers get updated based on our actual enrollment. Our enrollment actually grew. By 70 students higher than what I had projected in the five-year forecast. I've always projected enrollment pretty conservatively. So that additional 70 students led to an additional $150,000 on an annualized basis, in state funding for this year. So that's really good news. What that also means, though, is that now, being a formula district, we have a lot more variability with our state funding. In the past, no matter how much our number of students grew, we weren't getting any more money. So now we have the opportunity, if our enrollment continues to grow, of getting more money, but we also have the risk of, if our enrollment were to drop, we would actually lose money. So right now, that's good news. The formula is working. We'll keep an eye on that. And just keep in mind that means there could be, shifts and swings in our state funding. And of course, now that we're finally a formula district, they're looking at maybe creating a brand new formula. That who knows what that may do to us. But at least for now, it's working for us. And we're going to continue to monitor enrollment. You know, a 1 year. Increase doesn't necessarily equate to a trend, mm-hmm. But we're going to be looking into that as well and trying to get a better handle on what does that look like going forward.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Board President's report. I know we had a community copy this last Saturday, but I believe nobody attended this one.
Yeah.
So. Okay. This past month, I know. I think most of us were really focused on, just having those conversations about the levy, trying to reach out to people to, help them understand the value of financial stability and how we've got some low tax rates here. So now I'm with you. I mean, it's a relief to have that pass on. We can kind of focus on maybe doing some more building visits, things like that. I was able to attend the Ag Advisory Council meeting on November 1st. It's just a nice meeting to go to because they have representatives from all different kinds of ag-related industries, and they help them review their standards. They help them evaluate what's being offered. They give suggestions so that the students really have a top-notch opportunity to prepare themselves for the agricultural industry. Tri-Academy had their open house last night, and I got to participate in my first escape room. I'd never done that before. And it was just so much fun because those kids, it's like, it's not cool to like school, but you could tell that they were very proud of what they'd done, and I made it out of the room in time to get to another meeting, so that was good. Also, let's see, the chamber had a business impact breakfast this morning, and somebody from Columbus 2020 was there and just kind of sharing a lot of different statistics about economic development in the region. And it was very impressive. The lady also had high praise for Marysville and Union County. And then at the chamber board meeting that followed the breakfast, I was elected to continue serving as the education rep on the chamber board. So that's a one-year appointment. I thank the chamber for their ongoing support of our schools. They've supported the levy, and they've just been a great partner with our district. So, and then finally, I know last month we had talked about that there was a Cup Patterson Regional funding meeting, and Mr. Smith attended that and has been nice enough to provide some information to all of us about that meeting. I don't know if you wanted to
take a couple minutes.
That's in your report? Okay, good. So we'll take that. Capital Conference was this earlier this week, Monday and Tuesday. I know Brian was there on Sunday for some regional meetings, and then Dick Nan and I attended on Monday and Tuesday, and I think approximately we attended 19 different breakout sessions. Nan went to the business meeting.
Like 19 each?
No, in total, between the three of us.
I did 17.
You counted 17? Oh, yeah, right. We attended a general session where John Husted spoke a little bit about their plans for what they think about education, talked a little bit about who they are or who he is, and that was nice. Gina Davis was the keynote speaker, did a great job. Our goal is to email by Monday of next week a highlight of the sessions that we attended, and I know we always just get a lot of great information, and it's kind of an opportunity for us to say, hey, we saw this, and sometimes we find out that we're already doing that in our district and we just weren't aware of it. Sometimes we might have a few ideas that might get passed along to other building administrators to check out. But I just wanted to give one quick example. I attended an Active Bodies, Active Minds breakout session, and it was a Van Wert Elementary program that was started by their PE instructor. And it's part of their district-wide wellness program, which I think that's one of our second read policies about our wellness program. But they have a 100-mile club, a walking group, jumping jammers, jump rope group. They decided to change their recess to the beginning of lunch instead of after eating. They said they've had a lot of success with that. Then they had a group that created videos for teachers to use in their classrooms that talked about health topics, and so they showed one that was just an example of healthy snacks, and it was just really creative, really fun. They collect a lot of data, and they've seen a lot of positive results in behavior, academics, as well as strength, flexibility, and endurance. So those are just some of the things that we have an opportunity to hear from other districts of what they're doing. So our upcoming events on November 27th, Nan and I are going to go to a financial dashboard focus group. I can't remember if it's Ernie or the other guy that does all of that financial stuff. And they're trying to come up with a financial dashboard that you can use in your district to show the health of the finances in your district. And they're just kind of looking for input from people. And then ED 411, that's Economic Development 411, is on December 7th. And I think Nan and I are going to go to that too. So that's my report. Next up, legislative report.
I emailed to all of you, and so I'm just touching on a few things. I did go to the Cup Patterson School Funding Work Group. This Representative Cup and Representative Patterson are two of the most well-respected legislators in our state house. And they have organized a group of practitioners in school finance, superintendents, school treasurers, experts in school finance from different organizations and groups, including OSBA. They have been looking at the funding formula and ways we can take for education state of Ohio, and their beginning assumption was that the current formula is not rational, predictable, and it's overly complex. And so they, so they said they were going to try to attack three questions. First question was, what's the cost of a typical student being educated in a typical district? And they acknowledged that there is no typical student, and there is no typical district. And that they have been working on for over a year. And the sheet that I gave you is where they have arrived at this point. And it is focused on, really, from my perspective, the components of and education, not just the academic side, but also looking more at the whole child. So there are components in there in terms of mental health, physical education, those kinds of things. The next question that they will begin, they've held five meetings around the state to kind of preview this, and the one I attended was the last one. The question that they're going to attack next after the kind of review feedback that they get at this point is, what should the balance between the state share of the funding and the local share be? And again, they're not looking at specific dollars. They're looking more at what circumstances, taxing circumstances, every district is in, and what sort of taxing circumstances the state is in. And is there a way to come up with some sort of a rational basis to say the state should, for this district, provide this much, and this and the local community should provide this much? So can they come up with some sort of a rational reason for that? And then, once they've done that, the third question is, what are the add-ons? Transportation, special education, those kinds of things. And the comment was made in the presentation that transportation could end up being addressed as a completely separate issue from the instruction and school operation because of all of the issues that are involved in that that really don't have to do with the instructional aspect, the operation of the business. So you can read a little bit more about that. We've been able to make some legislative contacts at the conference here. I was able to speak with State Senator Peggy Lehner. She is chair of the Senate Education Committee. My report says it's the House, but that's incorrect. And State Representative Scott Ryan from over in Licking County. And I invited both of them to come and tour our school, and both showed interest. They are both very busy people, and as Peggy said, she said, I can't go visit every school in the state. And I kind of gave her a brief outline of what our school is doing. The fact that our school administrators have been providing information to other state departments of education, other school districts, that we are something special. And she said, you contact this person in my office and we'll get things set up. So tomorrow, Ms. Savage and I are going to meet with State Senator Burke and go over some of the legislative issues that are going to be addressed in the lame duck session of this legislature. I provided some information about some of the bills that are still in the legislative process that could surface. We talked last month about meeting with Jay Smith from OSBA and kind of reviewing what might come up. So you may find some interest in that. The last thing is that for the past 4 years, I served as the education representative to the Community Improvement Corporation. And my last meeting was yesterday. Emmy Beeson from Poles Career Technical Center is going to be occupying the seat that I've occupied for the last 4 years. And I provide a little information to you about what that organization does.
Great. Thank you very much. Safety Committee report.
We don't have anything this month because our meeting now doesn't take place till December. So Jonathan and I will be in December with more updates, what you, Holly, presented last month. Right. And we should have a complete update on the marijuana situation next month, you know. So all of that's not in place yet, even though they wanted it out and done. But what was it, Jonathan, September? It's still...
Still not.
Yeah, okay. They still have none of all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, but we should know more in December, so I'll report on that next month.
Thank you.
On a related topic, I see that they removed the Juul flavor, several of the flavors from the stores because they determined they were being targeted specifically at young people.
Mm-hmm.
So those flavored cartridges will only be available through the internet, which I don't know is much better, but
yeah.
It was a preemptive move on the part of Juul to try and reduce bad press because of the high nicotine content is coming to light. Mm-hmm. That the Juul are even much worse than cigarettes.
Absolutely.
And with that, we discussed that at the last meeting, Amy.
Right.
To where we've had some meetings in between with the Union County Health Department and some other partners in our community. Because vaping, Juuling is relatively a new thing yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we need to make sure that we're educating kids and parents and creating awareness so they truly understand the different aspects of it. So some literature, some visuals are being designed. So we're
hopefully we'll have those next month too.
Get the word out. Yep.
Right. And the signs. We want to get signs up too, as far as like the no smoking. We want to put, as Jonathan said, we need to get signs up that saying no vaping.
Right.
You know, because they're looking at vaping like not actually
it's not smoking.
Right. Mm-hmm. So so we've got a lot of homework to do in that area, and I think Holly was pretty open that on our drug committee, the youth drug coalition. So we'll probably be moving forward with that.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Next, I need a motion to approve the minutes from last month's meeting. Motion by Ms. Power.
Second.
Second by Ms. Savage. Any questions, comments, corrections? Nope. Okay, roll call, please.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Thank you. Motion carries. Next up, we have a discussion on the high school stadium bids.
I'll kick it off, I guess. I think it was Tuesday. We received our bids for the high school stadium project.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, all bids were over 10% above the estimate. So whenever we do a bid, you have to start with an estimate, mm-hmm. and then by state law, if those bids exceed that estimate by more than 10%. You can't even accept those bids.
Okay.
So that's kind of disappointing, but at the mm-hmm. same time, it's not, you know, not the end of the road by any means. So we kind of put our heads together, the architect, as well as various administrators, you know, are allowed to then talk to the vendors who bid. We had a lot of interest in the project, which is good news. I believe we had 5 bidders, which was much more than what we had for the middle school project. And you know, I guess after we discussed the issue and how do we want to move forward, I think we kind of came up with, I guess, kind of 2 different directions that we could choose to go. One option would be to, I would say, dramatically alter the project. You know, there's things that we could do to lessen the cost. The project would just look significantly different than what we've been talking about for the last, you know, year and a half or so. And you know, we don't have all the details of that. We haven't went all the way down that road, but if we decided to go that road, we would basically work up a new bid. The architect would work up new renderings. We would decide, you know, where do we cut to cut significant costs off of the project.
Mm-hmm.
The second way we could go would be to basically keep the project
relatively the same. There are some areas where we can trim without really dramatically changing the project. The footprint would still be pretty much the same, but there's some things we could do to make minor changes but save significant money. Like, you know, a quick easy example is in certain areas use asphalt instead of concrete. Asphalt is about half the cost of concrete, so in some areas you use that, you know, we could save significant dollars on that project. In making those changes, I think we can bring the cost down significantly. I would not project we can bring the cost down to where we wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. So to move forward with that option, we would need to infuse more dollars into the project. And, you know, we talked about, well, you know, what options do we have along that, those lines with funding? And considering the money that we've put forth already, the $6.5 million that the district has to put into the project is all TIF money. Mm-hmm. We could look at infusing more TIF dollars into the project. Since the time we started talking about this project, our annual TIF revenues have increased by around $1 million. So there is more money available that we could use. It's the things we need to keep in mind financially is, you know, those TIF dollars are right now going into our permanent improvement fund, which is basically supports our permanent improvement forecast, which is where we keep track of our buses and our computers and curriculum and roofs and flooring and all those good things. Mm-hmm. What we needed to look at was, are we able to take some additional TIF dollars, put towards the stadium without impacting, you know, that forecast and impacting our maintenance schedules, and then we would be able to do that. So I guess up for discussion tonight is...
And it also would not impact the issue that just passed. So, right. You know, we were asked on a pretty continual basis, are you trying to pass a new PI to build the stadium? And we said no.
Right.
And that was never the intent. And that also does not get into that money. I think it's important to make that very clear.
Yeah, because I'm trying... So with that levy, we were asking the money that had been going into the bond fund to be shipped into the permanent improvement, and that amount is approximately?
So the levy that just passed, the two mills, will generate somewhere between 1.6, 1.7 million. So due to the increased TIF revenue, we'll be able to take $1.6, $1.7 million of TIF revenue, deposit that into the general fund. Mm-hmm. Thereby, we're keeping the promise we made to voters of putting money into the general fund to help push off any new money levies,
right.
Still having money left over to support our permanent improvement forecast, mm-hmm. as well as having that money that we could push towards the stadium project.
Okay. So my question is, Todd, okay, so they came in at 10% over,
more than
10%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so in dollars and cents here, what do we have a cost of what that looks like? Do you know what I'm saying? Like the lowest bid
was about $8.9 million.
Okay,
and our estimates were 7.3.
Okay, so we're about 1.5.
According to architect, one thing that's going to potentially impact that is, I guess it would somewhat be a little bit like a tricks of the trade kind of thing. So if a bidder knows they're over 10%. They already know that we can't accept that.
Right.
So, you know, why even turn in the bid?
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of that is they want to turn in a bid anyway so that they, to show, you know, yeah, we're interested in this project.
Mm-hmm.
But when they turn in that bid, mm-hmm. there's the chance that they're going to, you know, really inflate that number so that they're not tipping their hat.
Right.
So the other bidders are seeing, you know, what the real cost is going to be, because they realize, you know, when they see that they're this much over, they likely are knowing that every bidder is going to be this much over.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that we're going to be rebidding. So they don't want the other bidders to know, you know, here's what I'm going to be coming back with when I give my true bid. So there's a chance, you know, when we look at that overage and what's driving that overage, that could be a big piece as to why it's like such a large number over. There's also
the timing piece of it, where we had put in such a strict deadline. I know when our architects spoke with each of the vendors, that was the very first thing they spoke to, mm-hmm. as to what drove the cost up, and it was that deadline. So we felt like if we could give them maybe a little looser of a deadline, they would be able to take out some weekend and overtime hours that they had projected for you know, working in winter hours with, you know, weather conditions and things like that.
So did they give us
one of the timeline issues is I've committed to the fact that we have graduation in that
stadium.
Mm-hmm. And so that we'd have to have certain things done by that time.
Right.
You know, example is the weather we're facing right now would put them significantly behind in the spring,
right.
and leave them in a spot that they might not make that deadline. There'd be a penalties associated with that, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the pieces of angst from the contractor side is the ability, and the further we put it off, the less likely that will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that graduation would, in fact, you know, we'd have to relook at that.
So, do we have numbers on that, Diane? Like, if we let up on that and we decide, okay, we'll just go ahead with graduation indoor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, that would be something we'd have to put in the bid package next time. We'd withdraw.
Okay.
We'd have to withdraw that date.
So, how far getting a new bid package? How far does that put us out now? How long does it take for these new bids?
Yeah, every time we have to go through the same exact process.
So there is a little bit of urgency with mm-hmm. you know, which route we want to go, because either way, we would need to rebid. So if we take option one, where we're basically totally changing the project, that's going to take longer, because now the architect has to you know, basically redo all the different drawings. The bidders would have to take time to change. You know, they're looking at something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
If we looked at option two, where we're in essence keeping the project, you know, pretty similar, the architect doesn't need to make nearly as many changes, which means we're able to get out to bid much sooner. You know, maybe we're able to get the bid out within the next week or two. The bid has to be out there, I believe, for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So we would potentially be looking at opening bids again sometime in December, to where we could act.
Well, then we're spending more money, too, if we have to go back to one and redo everything with architects and stuff, correct? Does that
I don't believe so. I think the architect, they're going to do the work for us, because that's, you know,
that's what they do.
That's what they do.
Okay. Well,
so it's more just the timing issue, but you know, yeah.
I myself
in favor of staying with two, because of the simple fact this is what we've shown the community, this is what has already been supported by our community, and I think that when it all is said and done, if we can back off that deadline and if we can add in some of the asphalt where it doesn't absolutely have to be concrete in particular areas, you know, I can see that you're cutting that way down. So I'm in favor with staying with two and go forward and make the adjustments that we need to make.
I think also we've had people who have donated money
mm-hmm.
with a certain expectation.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we said this is the project, and that's what they gave, you know, the project that we illustrated for them was a project that they gave their money to. And so I think there's an obligation in that respect. And when I got a call yesterday about this, I started thinking about, because I know we've made comments about graduation and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
We could have our bleachers and football field there and have a downpour and have graduation inside. So even if the stadium is there and available, there's no assurance. I mean, we can't sit here tonight and say graduation is going to take place in the stadium, because we have lightning and thunder and torrential downpour is not going to occur. I know that we've got some time, and there may be... to me, all the years that I worked in this district, every graduation that we've had, we did have some in the gym, and there were people that weren't able to get their entire families there and so forth. I think the push is to be able to bring any and all that want to come to the graduation and see it. So I think we have time to address that. Our stadium, I think, is one location. I think there may be others that we could explore. I know our high school principals work really hard. Graduation takes about 2 hours, 2 hours and a half. I've had two sons who went through graduations. I understand, you know, what the parents are looking for, what they hope is going to happen. But to hold up a contract like this over one event that's going to last 2.5 hours and could get rained out and moved inside anyway, I think tonight, having to make a decision, having to set a course is what we're going to do. I would think that we'd want to move forward with our original plan with reasonable modifications, try and control costs and see what we can get done. At the end of the day, this facility is going to last 40 to 50 years, and hopefully it sees lots of use, lots of graduations, and so forth. But I think we need to get there.
I don't necessarily have a concern about moving the graduation out. I guess I'm concerned on what are our non-negotiables in re-looking at the architectural drawings. So is it appropriate for the steering committee to share what they feel are their non-negotiables?
Yeah, because I was going to, I appreciate that we do have several members from the steering committee and I think the technical committee as well. And I think that's, it's important that our community know how much time has been spent with a variety of people looking at, a lot of different options for this project. So, I think we kind of asked if they would be here in case we had questions, in case they wanted to, make a comment or something about it. If you have a specific question that you would want to ask,
Think what would happen is once the board would make the financial decision and kind of steer us in that direction, that's what we would look to do then, pull the members of the steering and technical committee in and look at where we are and what those options are. Because they honestly, it happened 2 days ago, so they don't even know what the options are besides trading out asphalt for concrete because we shared it tonight.
Right.
So we re-engage with that group in order to make those.
Would the new deadline become the start of the next school year?
No, I don't believe so. I think the new deadline would still be to try to have it intact for next football season.
Which would be the start
so
of next
like August
year.
Time. Right. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Right.
I thought you meant to start next school.
No.
Yeah,
no.
To have it ready for next school year. Yes.
Right. Right.
I thought you meant to start next school year.
Well, since you bring that up, I know when I originally heard about this. I mean, there was that comment like, would it make sense to just delay this for a year instead of trying to, put ourselves right back up there. And so, I think we had a little bit of that conversation. And
yeah, two points along those lines is one, with the having the graduation / football season as our two bookends, there's the same problem every year forever. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem with, vendors are always going to charge a huge markup because of that small window. Right. And then the other issue with waiting is costs just go up every year with inflation and the way the economy is booming. There's the economy could start to tank at some point, but it's not likely to happen real soon. So every year we wait, the costs just continue to go up.
Which is, you know, I kind of go back to that business impact breakfast that I went to this morning, and looking at those statistics, I mean, it's no wonder that costs are going up, because things are just booming around here. So,
and I'm happy for you to ask questions. I just wanted to make sure you understood from our process, this wouldn't be just us saying, hey, we're going to do away with this, or hey, we're doing away with that. We'd reconvene. And if we couldn't get the whole group together, we've talked about entertaining, hey, call this person in at a time, just so we can be efficient as well.
Yeah. And I had the chance, I saw Chris Schmink last night, I saw Eric Phillips this morning. They're both on the steering committee, and I had talked to them about it a little bit. And I know, Eric just made the comment that, well, this project needs to move on. Mm-hmm. It needs to move ahead. We need a new football facility. We need a new stadium facility, multi-purpose facility. So,
and when we look at that, you know, I mean, it seems really high, but I think once you start backing down these little things and the deadlines and stuff like that, I think we're going to be more in tune with the original estimates. Mm-hmm. And it's going to also, we're going to be able to host things here. We're going to be able to host track meets. We're going to be able to do those things we can't do now, which is also going to bring in revenue. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just think with the urgency of it, you know, I don't think that we can go through this whole situation again and come out any better, because I think at that point, by putting it off, those costs are going to outweigh what the overage is.
And I know, you know, you made that commitment about graduation and stuff, but again, I had three kids graduate, and we were inside for one, outside for two, and I prefer outside, but
like Dick said, we have other options too. We can always explore. So
there
it is.
Right. And I also think about, you know, right now there's a lot of tension, it's a lot of money, but I think like 5 years down the road, and how proud we're going to be to have a facility like this for our students, for our community. I'm just really excited.
Prince and Jared and Cal and Corey and Mike and Tim here all kind of representing different collectives of the committee. So if you do have questions for them at all, you know, some of them, like Tim, was more on the nitty-gritty side of the technical committee than that committee worked to bring things forward to the, and Brent was on that committee, and then that committee brought things forward to the steering committee, which the other four sat on for, hey, we like this, we think really the idea of the red track pops better, those kind of last clarifying or help us with, this is what we're thinking about questions, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My biggest concern is, I want to make sure that it goes back to the whole committee again, so we don't end up in a situation where all the changes are in favor of one particular sport and the other sports or activities get the cuts. Because, you know, that's going to create a very bad situation in the community.
Right.
And we want to make sure that everyone's kind of being treated equally with equal amount of respect regardless of the sport.
Well, that was kind of my question. But you, Todd, you laid out two sort of main approaches. But it seems like the second approach could almost become the first.
Second approach.
Start making a little change here and a little change there and a little change there. When does it become a new project?
I would say there are more tweaks. The I think the part of that second approach that is going to be the biggest cost driver is changing the deadline. You know, we're talking about relatively minor tweaks that also will bring the cost down some. I think the concrete to asphalt will be a relatively big number, but again, that doesn't alter the project, in my opinion. Whether you're walking on asphalt or this area where it's concrete,
right.
I think, you know, that's not changing the footprint. So
when I looked at the numbers just now, if I'm doing this right, you kind of know how to reduce to get it within the 10% limit above the estimate. So is that something that you kind of, whoever does this work can kind of see, okay, we need to bring it down at least 900,000 or whatever? Are you going to be able to have some sense of those numbers as you're working on these?
Since we just got these 2 days ago, you know, they're working on what that's going to look like. They didn't go all that far down either road, but, you know, I've heard a lot of different ideas thrown out where the bid is going to, if we go down option two, which appears the way we're looking anyway, the bid may look entirely different than what we did. There's some different creative ideas that I've heard passed around that would really change the bid. I still, like I said, I don't think we're going to get to our original estimate. That's why, like I say, with option two, I think we're infusing more money. I don't think we're going to get down there without altering the project. And what we're saying is, we don't want to alter, you know, the major footprint.
Right.
You know, when we see this drawing that we've had for the last several months, that in essence will be the same.
And that, again, I go with what Dick said. When we already have commitments from Bruce Daniels, this and that, I don't think that we can change the footprint.
Yeah, I mean, what option one, you know, when you're talking about changing the footprint, might be to go back to a stadium like we already have, just replace the track and put some new bleachers in. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be drastically different than what the committee has worked to produce.
Well, as long as, like what Nam was saying, is I think as long as the committee is involved, all the relevant people, you know, all worked up about the time, that we're worried about the time, and then we leave somebody out who's already been involved, and somebody was saying may have different interests, different perspectives. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get so feeling so rushed that we.
But you're not going to leave anybody out. The track is the same. The stadium's the same.
I'm saying as different tweaks or whatever.
Right.
Well, we're talking about, for instance, one idea was going from one type of roof to another type of roof. Those are the types of things we're talking about.
What looks like a little minor tweak to one person may actually have, there may be somebody in the committee who's like, oh, that actually is a major change.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm guessing, but I don't want to speak for the football coach. I'm guessing he really doesn't care if we put an asphalt as opposed to concrete. But if I was going to put soccer goals in end zones instead of a field goal or whatever.
Yeah, that might not work.
You know what I mean? We will engage with that group.
Right.
We've engaged with them the entire time, so that wouldn't change.
Right. I know, because how long have you guys been meeting for this?
Probably over a year.
A year.
No, we don't.
Okay. And some longer than others. I feel like the technical group kind of really took off at the beginning and met more frequently, and then the steering committee didn't have to meet as often.
I'll back up what Dick said. You know, we never know with the weather, just like you look at now that we're backed up, whether it's going to be an inside or outside, and to cost us that big of a price for 2.5 hours. So I feel that we would be robbing our kids, actually, to not lift that deadline and back this project down to a smaller size just because of a graduation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that with lightly. I'm not saying that's a light situation.
Right.
I'm saying that we can do all that. We can go and get another plan, and we're rained out. We're sitting in there anyway.
Plus, we could have graduation at Dick, since he's the one who's...
Yeah, that's right. Have the bleachers ready, Dick.
Since I've been here, we've either had it at stadium or we've had it in the gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And there were, I think, some years long ago that we just did it in the gymnasium. We didn't go out on the field because the graduating classes were relatively small. And as classes got larger, to try to be able to accommodate all
families
and so forth, it moved there. I've said all along, the facility that we have now is inadequate. The facility is falling apart. I put the bleachers together. I tightened the bolts just with my fingers, as far as I knew. I don't know that anybody went back with a wrench.
That does not make me want to sit up there.
I know that when Harry Truman was president, the piano fell through the floor in the East Ballroom at the White House, and they did a review of it. And the architects came back and said that the White House was standing more out of tradition than anything else. You know, we've reached, I think, that point with our current facility. The voters in this community have, you know, gone to the polls, and they've been very gracious in granting us the funding we need. And I think from what Todd said, we're going to meet or potentially exceed every issue that you know was brought up during the campaign. The money that is being reduced on the bond side is going to increase in PI, and a like amount's going to get shifted over to the operating fund. So I think, you know, we are clearly fulfilling all of the obligations, all the expectations that we have to meet the recent levy vote. And I think if somebody were to try to make something out of it, I think they're just completely misguided. Yeah. I know that we have, as Todd said, we have the money to move this project forward. I think the plan that these guys put together, you know, they've invested a lot of time, they've invested a lot of thought. I think we owe something to the people that have worked hard on that committee to support their hard work and say, we're going to provide the funding to get this thing done. That we can, you know,
make a few tweaks,
for walkways and aprons around things and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think that's an easy trade. I know there are things, I'm aware of one contingency or option, the 25-second clock, to put a permanent installation in, which provides a lot of benefits, might not be doable if we do it later, you know, once the construction is done. So I sincerely hope that as the committee looks at, the things that have been planned, as we look at the dollars and as the architects come up with a new estimate on what they think, because they now have some new information from which to work with, I sincerely hope that we get, everything that needs to go in to make this the kind of place that I think we all sitting here had envisioned from the beginning. And again, in my mind, we started this thing for the kids. And our goal has always been to try to do the best we can do for the most kids that we can possibly do it. And I recognize the senior class may face some inconvenience, but I think at the end of the day, there's a much larger group of kids that will receive some benefit. And I think we can make a great effort to try to make sure that everybody has a wonderful experience, both at graduation and at future competitions. But we got to get this done and move forward.
Yep. And the only last comment I want to make is just kind of reaffirming your comments about the funding of it. You know, I really appreciate your going through those numbers and verifying that what the voters approved, those funds are going to be used exactly the way that we've said that they're going to be used. And for the stadium project, there's no taxpayer dollars. It's the TIF revenue, and it's TIF revenue above and beyond what was what's allocated for the general operation. So I just want to make sure that's very clear. So, okay. Well, I think you have a sense from us.
Yep.
Right? And I appreciate you guys all coming out here. And we look forward to you, you know, having some more conversations because we really value your input.
Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question.
Yeah.
You said that, Todd, if I understood you correctly, you said there's $1 million more TIF money than what we originally thought. Is that this year?
Our annual TIF revenue has increased by about $1 million more than what it was 2 years ago.
Okay. So when we started this, you started the thing, we were basing on $1 million less of TIF money. So it's
right.
And your operating budget didn't have that in there at all.
Correct.
Completely where we're at.
Right.
So, I mean, and I agree with Coach Smith and the rest of everybody on that. My question is you know, you got one shot to do this right. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And even some of the smaller tweaks, I think one of the big tweaks, if we have to give them the time, I know, in the construction business, mm-hmm. you know, that's huge. Because
right.
you do got to account for, if you don't meet a deadline, you're going to get charged $1,000 a day or something stupid. Those things, they increase their price a lot for that.
Right.
When you go back, I think you're 100% right. You're going to see a big change. But my question is like what Coach said, I mean, you've got people that promise and seen these things and knows what it is. For $100,000, $200,000, I mean, because I venture to say you're going to be within a few $100,000 when it's all said and done, with just taking that of where you're at. What do you really want to, I mean, is it really worth it? Because I know sitting on these committees and stuff, we didn't choose the Cadillac. Mm-hmm. You know, we could have. I mean, but obviously we didn't have that money. We did it conservative. Now, we didn't choose a load either. Because at the end of the day, you're going to pay for it either now or later. You know, and that's the problem with a lot of people. They want to half-ass things at the beginning. And then you're going to pay for it 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. So what we did is we chose that part that was just enough, you know, that, okay, maintenance of that field, the track. We chose the avenues that would get us the most return, you know, on our bucks. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, give something for this whole community to be proud of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard from a lot of band parents, can't wait. Mm-hmm. Soccer, can't wait. Mm-hmm. Football, can't wait. Track, can't wait. I mean, everybody's excited in this community because, like I said, as Coach said, I mean, this has been due. And you guys are the first one to step up and do it. And I'm mm-hmm. thank you for that. But like I said, I think a third option ought to be, too, when we see what it is, let's see if we really want to make tweaks, or do we want to go back and try to raise a few $100,000? Really, at this point, we haven't touched a lot of the brick that, you know, different ideas. I would highly caution to really change anything at this point other than the time frame and see what it does, because, like you said, they're inflating the prices because they all knew where it was going to be. Mm-hmm. When you drop that off, and then you say, hey, this is where we got to be, they know it's 10%. Okay, see what you got. So that's only thing I have to say. Mm-hmm. I would highly caution about really trying to keep it the same if it's a couple $100,000.
I did, you know, like, well, I just think about anybody who's done a project, labor is a humongous part of the project, and when you start making that overtime, uh-huh. yeah, that will change the numbers pretty quickly.
Especially heavy equipment stuff.
Yeah.
You're paying somebody, you know, a state wage for that at $60 an hour mm-hmm. as opposed to 30.
Right, yeah. Adds up quickly. So, okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Well, we just need to. I'm not sure how to do this Robert's rules, but just like a couple minute recess here, just waiting for Amy to get back.
Okay.
So before we move on to, because we do have some motions, we do have some motions to make. So
I would just say, committee
yes.
members, thanks for coming.
Yes, thank you, and yes.
Unless you'd like to stay for the riveting conversation to finish, but
just left the riveting.
Thank you for coming.
Yes, thank all of you.
Okay.
I'm taking like a 5 minute recess.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Are we still recording?
Yes.
Did you pause it? Okay.
Thank you for recognizing her.
Thank you.
We're
glad you guys are
she's done a lot of work.
Yeah, she has. I couldn't remember what year Lester told me she started.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
She wanted to do it too. It was her idea from the beginning. So, and she's good at it too.
Yep. She's on it.
If I can just get copy sourced.
You still have a bill?
Still. That's there's history there. That's the way she is. So we'll get it.
All right.
Take care.
Home. Okay, 5 minute recess. I'll call us back to. I know I didn't do that one right.
Am I going to be the only one here?
Yeah, I got another to do that.
Yeah, you can sit in the front row if you want to.
No, you're good.
Okay.
It's unusual that everybody just left the comma. Can you take out things?
Yep.
Back from our 5 minute recess. The next item on our agenda is I will take a motion to approve the treasurer CFO action items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Powers.
Second.
Second by Mr. Smith.
Some of the main items in there, you'll see an increase in our appropriations of $222,000 to our IDAB grant. That's new this year, what they call IDAB restoration funds, which is a grant. My understanding of it is it was money, federal money, that was kind of reallocated from the 2015 allocation. So every district in the state, or mostly anyway, got some additional money from this grant. So that's what that $222,000 is. It's money for our special education programs. There's the renewal of the Hope Center lease on the agenda that we renew each year. It's essentially identical to last year. There's a minor tweak in there with Tri-Academy using space in the Hope Center. We give them a credit on their rent, and with us taking up a little more space, there was a minor tweak in the amount of that credit. And we had a meeting and discussed all that with the Hope Center. Also, there's a couple donations to the stadium fund for a recognition on there. Yes, very generous donations. And that's all for me, unless there's any other questions.
Let's see, the resolution for the Fab Lab. Is that on there? The ECHS.
Yes. It's a student activity.
Oh, that's a student. Oh, okay. Yours is. Okay, I've got the wrong one. Okay, yep, sorry. There's two things on there. Any questions or comments up top?
Yeah, on the Hope Center, is that the additional space? Is that the office that they kind of worked in?
Yes.
And we'll note the Hope for the Holidays is coming up, and I think Tri-Academy is being recognized as their partner, so I think it's worked out to be a really great deal for us. So.
Okay.
In that case, roll call, please.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, I would accept a motion to approve the superintendent items.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Savage.
Second.
Second by Ms. Powers.
All right. Several HR items. Wanted to highlight, we do have a couple retirements, so certainly appreciate their service. Judy
Lynette's been out, so I don't know how many years she's been in the district, but certainly for quite some time, and has made a huge impact in literacy for kids, and does a great job out at Raymond, so we are certainly sad to see her go. We've tried to hang on to her for as long as we can, but I think it's time for her to do some other things. We have supplementals and volunteers, and you had a lengthy list of second read policies, so I know a couple of you reached out to Jonathan with clarifying questions, and we already mentioned the bullying thing this evening as well, so... Also, my section there is the bid for the auto lab that we're partnering with Honda Marysville for the additional gym space in the early college building. As you know, that's been in the works kind of all year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an overnight trip, but it's not for like 2020.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know Jacob, he's ahead of the game. but trying to get that out, I think, also to inform parents and put it on their radar.
Yes. I appreciated that heads up by Jacob. I know Darlene McChesney's on there for retirement, and I know she was a teacher of a couple of my kids, and actually I knew her daughter. Her daughter was a teacher for a while, and she taught one of my kids and stuff, so we'll miss her as well.
Judy, I was sitting here trying to think when she started. It's been a while.
She's my sister-in-law's age, so I know how old she is, but I will not say it for the record. Okay.
Okay. She's a great example of the type of teacher that has come to Mary. Been here for the biggest part or all of their career, and have really been one of the pillars upon which we continue to build.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you lose a part of your foundation, it's always difficult. And Judy is a very special part of the Raymond community, and you will certainly be missed.
But I think because of the kind of person she is, we know that there are other little Judys just waiting to grow up and take her spot eventually. Okay. Any questions or any comments about, I know, like with those second read policies, again, I know we talked about them last month, but the committee really does an amazing job, and I appreciate how they... kind of send a condensed report to give us a heads up of why some of these things are on here. And Jonathan and I talked a little bit about any of these policies that require reports or things like that. Anything that requires a report to the board that, maybe we might try and work out a calendar as a reminder for all of us and when we should be expect to see some of those things. But, yeah, they're all a lot of good work.
Jonathan conducts a very riveting meeting.
Yes.
And I've had the pleasure to sit in and to go through these. Even though the vast majority of these are, in most cases, minor tweaks of a word or two driven by changes in state law, each one is individually looked at and evaluated to see whether or not it fits the law, but also does it still fit our district and work the way that we want. So it's nice that we have the administrative staff that comes in and puts the time in to make sure that the local control, the local voice of what's going on in our school is always a part of the policies.
Quick question on the auxiliary gym too. What's the time frame on that? Like, when would that start, and about how long would that take?
Yeah, again, it's some timing issues there, but we hope to be done in March.
Okay. Good. Another great opportunity for our kids.
Yeah.
Once that's done, because right now they've just been working at Honda, right? So that'll be nice when they don't have to do that. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Okay, roll call.
Ms. Savage?
Yes.
Ms. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Luke?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Sorry. Ms. Devine?
Yes. Motion carries. We are now up to comments and questions from board members. Mr. Smith?
The conference that we attended was a very good conference, and I certainly enjoyed attending most of the sessions that I went to. But I'm really excited about the project that we discussed tonight. And we've said before, we got one chance, I just, I want us to keep the kids in the forefront of our thoughts as we go forward on this thing. What's in the best interest of our students? Because that's where I think we started, and that's where I want to end up. Additionally, I wanted to say that, and I've mentioned this before, but when you talk to people about our district, and you mention people coming from Arizona to find out what we're doing, when you talk about providing advice to the Department of Education in North Dakota and South Carolina, and when you talk about all of the things that are going on, I was trying to list all the pathways that we have.
Yeah.
And I realized, as I was talking with State Senator Lehner, I can't name them all. Mm-hmm. We've got some that are well established and I'm familiar with, and we have others that are new this year and others that are on the horizon for next year. And so just, the opportunities for kids in our community to direct their own education, and I'll emphasize, they're making the decisions as to their own education. The opportunities they have to be able to do that are just incredible, and it makes sitting here at the end of the table fun. I enjoy that. So, I'll be quiet.
I'd like to extend a thank you to Mr. Cochran and the rest of the staff for hosting us this evening. I wanted to cover an event that Sue and I attended at Tolles Tech. It was a viewing of a film about High Tech High School out of California. It's a very, very innovative high school doing a lot of the things that we do on a very advanced stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very good film. We had the opportunity to view it with several members of the State Board of Education, mm-hmm. along with economic development people from different areas in mm-hmm. around Columbus. It was a great opportunity to kind of reaffirm that the direction that we're headed in is matching our students and our future workforce needs. So it's nice to go someplace and mm-hmm. See that kind of reaffirming message,
right,
that we are headed in the right direction. Also, in regards to the Capitol Conference, the one thing that I wanted to highlight was I went to a session on changing your educational culture within your district, and it's a collaborative between the University of Dayton and Centerville City Schools, and they made a Centerville City Schools made a three-year commitment to work this program. And it really stems from some of the teachers began realizing about 4 or 5 years ago that students coming into their classrooms weren't learning in the same method that they had been previously. They were questioning the teachers more. They weren't taking them as the absolute authority on things because they have access to information in their hand. Mm-hmm. Everyone now has a computer in their hand literally all the time. And their interaction with computer systems, with just how society has grown over the last few years. And so it started a small movement, which kind of has grown into a large movement that has following very much down the path of personalized learning. Mm-hmm. And they were very honest about sharing some of the bumps in the road, mm-hmm. and in convincing especially more traditional teaching style teachers that mm-hmm. maybe step out of your box and maybe try this, and they've had some very promising results. So mm-hmm. It's called IACT is the group that's involved, but again, another completely separate school system. We don't even interact with the University of Dayton or Somerville schools, mm-hmm. and they have kind of come to the same conclusion in some of the direction that we're moving also. So it was very impressive. Again, she said we had a community coffee, and we didn't have anyone attend. I had reached out to a couple of people that seemed to have a lot of questions during the levy campaign, mm-hmm. and invited them to come have coffee with us. So maybe next month.
Okay. Oh, wait, yeah, no, we're not doing one next month.
That's December. We don't do one in December because that gets busy, so January.
Well, I think we actually said February. I think that's what our website says. I don't know. Well, we'll see. Yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out. Maybe we will do it in January. We'll decide that in January. Okay? Mr.
Yep. Well, I didn't get to go to as many learning sessions at the conference as I would like, but you guys are going to maybe have a highlight or two, and I'll look forward to that. But I did get to go to the executive committee meeting for the central region of OSBA, which is that group I participate in. It's mostly a networking thing, mm-hmm. and there's about 15 or 20 school board members from our region. And one thing that was kind of interesting this time was the incoming president of the entire OSBA is from our region, so mm-hmm. he was there. And the incoming president for the NSBA, mm-hmm. National School Board Association, is in the central region.
Oh, wow.
He was there. So the networking I do there felt really like legitimated. I mean, we really are connected, and so I'll keep participating in that. And I just wanted to thank everybody who was part of the meeting tonight. There's a lot of good things going on. Really happy about the levy result, and really encouraging for the work on the stadium project that's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
I liked everything, how we recognized everyone tonight. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really neat with Jane and all of them, because there is so much work involved in that. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that the little bit that we do even touches what they've done out there. Mm-hmm. I was pretty impressed with where Tom has brought the high school at this point, because mm-hmm. That was totally different from when we were here before. Right. And so... And I like their war room. Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome to kind of keep track of every child in the high school. I think that's really neat. Other than that, PTBM, I'm there. That's it.
Okay.
I'm all the way. I'm,
you've been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a quick comment on the stadium project, and I appreciate your input there. And I wouldn't have even brought forward an option two if it weren't something that we could do. Without if we couldn't do it without keeping the promises we made. So, I think the passage of the levies, one is a affirmation of the things that we're doing in the district. But for me personally, it's them saying, we trust you with our dollars.
Yes. Right.
So, most important to me and priority one is maintaining that trust and ensuring that we're able to follow through on the promises we made. So just assuring you that, we wouldn't even be talking about an option two if we couldn't, maintain those promises.
Yeah, right. And you know what, Todd, I'm really happy that we're going forward with the original plans, because I think there would be a lot of people and one of our biggest supporters mm-hmm. that would be terribly disappointed if we backed out of where we're at. Mm-hmm. So...
I
think, great point. The only thing I would add was it also doesn't disrupt our current PI forecast, which was important to both of us as well when we talked about that. So we didn't want to take from a curriculum cycle or resource adoption or buses or whatever. So excited about that. I would tell you, you know, certainly tonight is an evolution of work that, you know, we've been talking about for some time, and things you have been hearing from elementary schools, I hope you finally started to hear out of the high schools. They, I think Tom acknowledged that they still have a path and they have to stick to their plan, They shared the plan in July, but we were kind of like, ugh. So now, you know, they had systems in place. And now it's sticking to the plan and being dedicated. And so
super. And I think he's very excited about it.
Well, So, we kept talking about once it catches, it's contagious,
Yes.
And we just had to get some contagion.
So that, that group of 15 or, you know, whatever, their little core group.
And that people are interested. Does removing the desks from your classroom mean you're personalizing learning? No. But it is a step in trying something different and being encouraged to do that and take a risk, and there's no punishment, if it doesn't work. So now you can go to those things that are a little more high level, and you've created the culture of taking risk and change, and that
and teaching these kids to live outside of the box.
And take responsibility for
their own. If you haven't visited here this year, and there's certainly great evidence of different things going on when you're around. So I just wanted to, you know, certainly acknowledge that work, because it's been a journey.
Good stuff.
And thanks for all the committee stuff. You know, I've joked that I feel like I'm a little bit on levy hangover, to know what to do with all my free time now. But it was a just fantastic.
It was. Well, and even like when you were talking about Jane and the amount of time that she puts in. I mean, people don't realize that when you're the treasurer of a committee like that, you have to submit reports on a regular basis, whether you have a levy or not. As long as that committee is open, you've got to submit your reports.
And you know, not taking away from anyone else, but Jane is not well. And what she put out.
So she never hesitated. She was she was in from day one.
That's what I mean. You know,
we're really
that's
lucky. So thank you to Mr. Cochran. I just want to make a comment. I thought with this being the first Calamity Day, I said something to you before the meeting, but I wanted to publicly say how much I appreciated the email that went out to parents that, you know, gave a very clear explanation of how you approach Calamity Days and how you do your research and decide whether you're going to delay or, you know, cancel and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was excellent to get that out there right now. And finally, just a happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Next week, a week from today, we'll be laying around stuffed and tired,
And noodles and stuffing and the whole bit.
Motion to adjourn.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Second.
Second, Ms. Powers. Roll call.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Ms. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Luke.
Yes.
Ms. Savage.
Yes.
Ms. Devine.
Yes. The motion carries. We are adjourned at 9:12.